Blog Talk Radio.
This broadcast is the property of E2G Sports Network, E2GSports.com, and E2G Sports LLC.
Good morning, everybody. Football MD is back with another exciting episode for you here. We took last week off in observance of Mother's Day, had to take care of the moms, but we're back here. And as always, we want to thank you for listening to the E2G Sports Network, home of the Unsung Sports Grid. I'm John Mendoza, joined by my co-host Dalton Davidson, to break down, diagnose, and prescribe a solution for your team as this NFL offseason is starting to get kind of wrapped up here. We're done with the draft. That's in the rearview mirror. We've got mini camps starting, labor disputes aside, and it's going to start to be, you know, a little bit of a wind down with some Tier 2 free agency signings, and then we've got training camp and fantasy football to look forward to. So thank you for sticking with us through the NFL offseason. We have a lot to talk about today. Two quarterbacks, both famous in their own right, making headlines for two completely different reasons. We've got some draft recap for you, maybe a couple draft grades, and as always, an update on my home team, the Denver Broncos, and Dalton's home team, the Arizona Cardinals. Good morning, Dalton. It's really rainy and dreary over here in Colorado. I'm sure it's sunny and beautiful in Arizona. How you doing, man?
I'm wonderful. You're right. It is sunny and beautiful. It's starting to get a little warm. We've had our first sighting of 100 degrees this week, or the last couple of weeks. So it's getting warmer up in Phoenix, but times are great, you know. Good news is the Cardinals don't have to deal too much with that. Is I believe they are still doing their training camp up in Flagstaff like usual. So hopefully they don't have to deal too much with that, but not to mention their stadium's in a dome anyways if they wanted to head there. But yeah, everything's great over here. I'm excited to talk about the show after we've got a couple of weeks of excellent, exciting news between the draft and, of course, the schedule came out this week. So lots of exciting things to talk about in that front.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess what we could start off with is what's been making the headlines this week. And I guess this goes all the way back to when the news broke on draft day. Just this whole Aaron Rodgers saga. We haven't really had the chance to sync up on this and kind of give our thoughts. But daggone, Aaron Rodgers wants out of Green Bay. And we knew he was frustrated. I think anybody with, you know, any football knowledge could have shown that last year with the pick of Jordan Love and the fact that the Packers traded up to get Jordan Love instead of trading up for another wide receiver or another offensive weapon, that kind of pissed him off. I can't fault him for that at all. You're trying to win the Super Bowl. You don't go out and get who many consider to be like a sixth best quarterback of that draft. But then this year, I mean, just they've been so quiet and free agency. They haven't made any splashy moves. So Rodgers comes out and says, that's it, I'm done, texting teammates, telling possible free agents, don't come here. I won't be here when you sign that contract. What are your thoughts on Aaron Rodgers, man? And is this relationship repairable?
I mean, it's interesting because there's been quite a lot of different stories coming out of this issue. And I mean, the way Aaron handled it to begin with was, you know, the most calculated act of petty I think I've ever seen. And I don't necessarily disrespect it. It was really great entertainment. But, I mean, to wait a full year, to wait until draft day, in the first round, you know, wait until draft day to say, no, this is the day I'm done with the Packers. Could have had all offseason to say it. Could have had during last season to say it. Could have said it after the draft last year. But no, he thought about it. He let it marinate inside him and just let that hate build until this draft day, 1 year anniversary, effectively, to the day that the Packers picked Jordan Love last year. And he says, no, I want out. Get me to San Francisco. Get me to Las Vegas. And, of course, he'd had these conversations with the Packers, from what it sounds like, leading up to this, and, you know, was encouraging them to seek a trade to San Francisco or Las Vegas or Denver. Congratulations. Maybe you'll get another Hall of Fame quarterback at the end of his career. But the way this is handled is so petty and at the same time just so entertaining. It's been great fuel for our off-season drama, but what do we actually think is coming from it? Because if you're looking at it from a purely business standpoint on the Packers side, what makes sense? what can we actually get? If someone is to actually try to offer a trade for one of the most proficient quarterbacks in league history, one of the greatest quarterbacks in the league, who's apparently still in the midst of his prime by all standards as he's coming off of an MVP season, what trade package could realistically be put together for him? And that's where this starts to get a little less interesting, is when you start thinking about the actual numbers of trying to put this thing together. I mean, you offer 3 first-round picks, great, and what? Because you can't offer more than 3 first-round picks. Okay, 3 second-round picks, don't care. Okay, what else you got? I mean, I struggle to see this really coming to fruition without at least like a third team getting involved somehow. And because there's going to have to be some level of extra compensation to the Packers over this. This is a very strange trade situation. We've never seen this high, this level of popularity in a player, this level of power swing in a single trade. I mean, we've seen, you know, big trades before, like DeAndre Hopkins last year, Matt Stafford this past year. I mean, those were pretty big trades, but for Aaron Rodgers, the defending MVP, it's never heard of. It can't be imagined to think that a guy who just won MVP on a team that I believe went 13-3 2 years in a row is wanting out. But he does want out because he knows that his team is doing nothing to help him win and be successful and try to pursue the title of greatest of all time, which I think, you know, maybe means something to him.
It's just so fascinating to me because this is the second time that we've seen this happen. This exact offseason with Deshaun Watson wanting his way out of Houston before he had his extra round of drama and the allegations come up. And now Aaron Rodgers just wanting out of Green Bay and both players flat out saying, I am done. Like, no, there is no contract negotiation. There is no, you know, there's no coming back. I am more than happy to sit out and stop playing football until I leave this team. And that is just kind of crazy to me because they're for 2 completely different reasons. Watson's tired of just being on a terrible Houston team that was coached by a terrible coach and a terrible general manager. But the Packers have had success with Aaron Rodgers. And I think both of us would slightly agree that if you take Aaron Rodgers off that team, they are probably the 3rd or 4th worst team in that division. Just instantly. With Jordan Love at quarterback, that's the 6th, lucky if you get 7-win team. But at the same time, you know, we also have to play Belichick's advocate here to say Rodgers isn't in a terrible situation. Yes, the Packers have been very quiet in free agency. They haven't pieces along their offense. They haven't gotten any wide receivers. The first receiver they drafted was, pardon me, as a 3rd round, I think. And, you know, that's probably going to be more of a gadget guy anyway. So, yes, I understand Rodgers' frustration, but not every team has a Devontae Adams. Not every team has, you know, a solid offensive line. Not every team has an Aaron Jones in the backfield. And though I think that Green Bay's weaker schedule kind of bolstered their defensive stats last year, statistically speaking, they were a top 10 defense in the league. Not every team has that. So if you're Aaron Rodgers and you're asking to get out and you're asking to leave, you know, we mentioned San Francisco. They can't make a trade happen because obviously they just took Trey Lance and they don't have any first-round picks for the next 3 years. You talk about the Las Vegas Raiders. You talk about the Denver Broncos. So bias aside, I think the Broncos would be a good fit for Rodgers. But if the Raiders were to come out and make this giant trade for Rodgers, are we really saying that the Raiders are a better team right now than the Green Bay Packers? Because the Packers were 1 win from a Super Bowl, 1 quarter away from a Super Bowl last year. And the Raiders, well, they're the 4th best team in a division with the Chiefs and the Chargers in it. So it's just fascinating to me. Sometimes the grass isn't always greener. And I'll be interested to see, you know, who wins this kind of game of chicken. Does Rodgers really feel comfortable sitting out and playing Jeopardy with his new, you know, his new wife? Or, you know, do the Packers eventually get them to come back and kind of finish what they started and take down Tom Brady and the Bucks?
Well, if I'm honest, I can't see the Packers being better than they were last year. I think they've had their last 2 years, they've been, you know, that fake kind of power level that, I compare to the Pittsburgh Steelers of this past season. I mean, they're getting wins and they're beating teams and it's looking flashy and it looks great. And then they get to the playoffs and what happened? They don't look competitive anymore. They play some of the top teams in the league and they suddenly don't look competitive anymore, such as, you know, Tampa Bay. And to me, this all sparks from the Tom Brady deal. I mean, when you talk about Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson as well, who is looking for a trade this offseason, Matt Stafford actually got out of Detroit, and now Aaron Rodgers. To me, and I don't like to give too much attention to Tom Brady because we give plenty to him already, but it springs from a desire to me of it's not working here. They're not doing what I asked them. I don't get what they're doing in the front office. I need to get somewhere that's going to give me some level of power. I need to go. I mean, I'm as important to this organization as Tom Brady was to New England. I'm not saying that that's true, but I'm saying that a lot of these quarterbacks feel that way in a Watson, a Rodgers, and a Wilson. And they want to go to a team that's going to treat them that way, the way that Tampa Bay treated Tom Brady when he came in and was basically the general manager and half the coach of that team as soon as he came in. And what were the results? A bit of a rough start as things got figured out, and then Super Bowl, and now by all accounts, dynasty. That's what all of these guys see happening. Is it possible? I don't know. Matt Stafford got his deal. He's with the Rams right now. You know, they were, as soon as that happened, come out initially one of those Super Bowl favorites right away. They're definitely in that probably top five or so teams, as far as I'm concerned, that has a chance to win a Super Bowl. But can they actually take down Tom Brady and the Bucs? I don't know. That team seems so powerful right now. Can they even finish first in their division? That division is stacked. But Aaron Rodgers, I mean, the Raiders, can you really justify really thinking you're going to have success in Las Vegas right now? I mean, what are you going there for? A fun career? A fun end to your career? I mean, I guess you're going to go and you're going to live up the fame and whatnot. And I can't see you winning the Super Bowl there in the next couple of years, because especially if the Raiders take you, they're going to have nothing else on their team. The Packers have a much better team right now. So, okay, maybe the Broncos. I still don't know what the Broncos could offer. I mean, you offer your top three draft picks and what else? Because it's going to be and what else? I could almost see the Niners putting together a trade package because they've got a couple of really strong players on rookie contracts. I mean, you'd be talking about offering like a Trey Lance and a Nick Bosa. I don't know if that's feasible salary cap wise, but I would imagine it's closer to feasible since they are still on rookie deals. But even then, like, if you're the 49ers, I think that's, like, you might win a Super Bowl this year, but I think it's suicide going past that as far as sustainability, and because you're going to have to give up first-round picks. You've got no youth left on your team. You might win a Super Bowl. Is it worth that? Because it's still not a guarantee that you give up Aaron Rodgers, that you go and grab Aaron Rodgers and you're going to win a Super Bowl right away. There's no guarantees. Football is a game of one-game series in the playoffs, in the regular season as well. It doesn't take much to mess up a Super Bowl run, and Aaron Rodgers has made mistakes in the past. He's certainly not invincible. So to say that you're going to give up your whole franchise to go and get him is, I don't know if it makes a whole lot of sense.
For sure. I just want to thank our listeners at E2G Sports Network, home of the Unsung Sports Grid. You're listening to Football MD with Mendoza and Davidson, diagnosing, breaking down this Aaron Rodgers drama. We still have another quarterback to talk about going into the next segment. You can give us a call. Let us know what's on your mind and ask for a prescription for your favorite team as the NFL offseason comes to a close. 516-387-1702. Again, that's 516-387-1702. Couple closing thoughts, and then, you know, let's talk about our favorite college quarterback of all time. Rodgers, you got to give up a lot to get him. You put together a couple of trade packages that the Broncos and Niners maybe could throw. But those same trade packages were being talked about for Deshaun Watson. Now, apples to apples, Rodgers, as of right now, as of this show, is obviously the better quarterback. He has won a Super Bowl. He's won NFL MVPs, coming off, you know, his NFL MVP last season. But the thing is that Aaron Rodgers is not young anymore. He's going into, I turned 36, 37 this year. So if you're going to make this big trade, you're basically renting him for 4, maybe 5 years. And granted, that's going to be 4 or 5 years of the best quarterback play your franchise has probably ever seen. But what makes this so different from a guy like Watson is that Watson is in his mid-20s. If you made a trade for him, he's your quarterback for the next 10, 13 years. And you invested that, you know, that draft capital, those assets for a quarterback that's going to carry your franchise for the next decade. So just two very interesting things. And I'll be very curious to see if Rodgers is traded, what the compensation looks like. Because I think you make a valid point that while the Niners don't have draft capital, they've got young pieces on those rookie contracts. A Trey Lance, who is worth 3 first-round picks. I mean, the Packers still have Jordan Love, so I don't know what that succession plan looks like. But it'll be very interesting to see. Because if Rodgers leaves, that division, that NFC North, is wide open. And I'm really excited to see that division without Rodgers, because I think even a team like the Lions, the Bears, and the Vikings can all contend for that division title. But enough about
Rodgers.
Absolutely.
And one more, point before we move on is, since you brought up Jordan Love, is the Packers brought in 2 extra quarterbacks this past week in Blake Bortles
and a
walk-on, basically. So that tells you their confidence level in Jordan Love right now. They also put out a statement saying that he's got a long way to go. So Jordan Love could be part of that trade deal whenever that happens, if that were to happen. But yeah, let's move on. Let's talk about something that's much more exciting.
Much more exciting. Tim Tebow. He's back. It's been quite a while, but he's back. And he's going to go play tight end for the Urban Meyer-led Jacksonville Jaguars. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but does this even make a lick of sense at all?
Absolutely. It makes so much sense. Does it make sense for Tebow? I don't know. Does he want to play football? I guess he does. He misses... I don't know if he just misses the limelight or if he just misses hitting people, because he's pretty good at it. A lot of people remember how bad he was at passing and forget how gigantic a 250-pound guy running at people, how terrifying that was for so many guys. He would destroy people. He was a fantastic runner. That was 8+ years ago. He hasn't played since 2012. Does it make sense for Jacksonville? Now, a lot of people are talking about how, gosh, this is ridiculous that Tim Tebow could just come in and take a roster spot from someone. And I'm like, okay, you guys don't have a problem with a guy from the European League coming and taking a roster spot or anything else? He's not even guaranteed a roster spot yet. To my knowledge, he's not officially signed a contract. Not to mention, he has to still go and earn that roster spot, should that be given to him. Sure, he's got a buddy-buddy deal with Urban Meyer, and that's assumedly why he's in this situation to begin with. But does it make sense for Jacksonville? Let's see. What else would we be talking about regarding Jacksonville? Trevor Lawrence, sure. But what about the rest of the offseason? You're not going to talk about Trevor Lawrence the whole offseason. Tim Tebow will keep all of America talking about Jacksonville for no real reason, besides
right.
the fact that we might have signed a backup tight end. And we're going to talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars, who we have not talked about since, when were they created? What, like 96 or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is a fantastic deal for the Jaguars. And to me, this is such a great decision by Urban Meyer to go and just generate some PR. This is such a excellent scenario for them that they can just make a seemingly useless move and get themselves into the media.
The position will say tight end, but mark my words here on May 16th, Tebow's going to be more of a gadget guy. He's going to be a gadget tight end. It's going to be a crazy offensive system. You know, we'll talk about their draft in a minute, but Travis Etienne is taking snaps exclusively at wide receiver during minicamp and rookie OTAs. So this offense is going to be wild. I mean, you're going to have Tebow as a gadget guy and maybe an ex tight end, you know, one of those guys who can take a direct snap or do a reverse, you know, pitch the ball out of the backfield or run a drag route and just run guys over. It's hard to stop a 250-pound monster who runs a 4.7 when you're a 5.9 defensive back just trying to square up to try to tackle him. So I don't think he's going to play as much tight end as people think. I think he's going to be way more of a gadget guy. And, heck, I'm excited for that. Even if it's to relieve Trevor Lawrence, if the Jags are getting blown out in a game and you don't want to risk Lawrence's health, throw Tebow behind center. Screw it. Don't let Lawrence take the beating. Let Tebow take that beating. Don't ruin the best quarterback we've seen since Andrew Luck. And, you know, let Tebow go out there and do the dirty work. I'm cool with that.
Yeah, and another thing that's nice about the situation for Tebow is he's probably not going to have to learn an entire playbook. People are expecting him to come in and be a starting tight end and be suddenly the Antonio Gates of this team. He's not going to line up and have to block all the time. Maybe he will be blocking occasionally. I expect him more to be honestly lining up as a inside slot wide receiver who's maybe going to crack down on a block once in a while. And if he does, that's a big guy cracking down on a block, bigger than most wide receivers. He's a little undersized for a tight end at 6'2", but come on, he hits like a truck. Y'all have seen it. You guys remember that, I'm sure. His playmaking ability is phenomenal, of course. And you mentioned the gadget plays. This is back to his freshman year when he was playing behind Chris Leak at Florida. They go and they win the national championship game. And one of the reasons they were able to do that was some of those gadget plays Urban Meyer crafted for Tim Tebow's amazing ability to run the ball. And, you know, he can hit the pass if he's got to, and they're not expecting it, kind of. We're not asking him to drop back and throw it 60 yards consistently like he did in Denver or in New York. But if there's a trick play and that's going to be called, he's got the arm for it. You know he can throw it that far. He can toss it deep. Mm-hmm. The accuracy questionable, but if the guy's open, it's going to work, right? If he's not having to fit it in between a couple of defenders, he's going to have that. His ability to run the ball, though, is phenomenal. What I like about him being a tight end rather than just a running back is now suddenly you're talking about him trying to break tackles or defenders trying to tackle him who are nickelbacks, cornerbacks, safeties,
right,
rather than just inside linebackers or defensive tackles. If he gets into your second level, you're not going to be able to bring him down with one guy. He's going to be able to get first downs so easily. And his raw strength, not to mention his speed, is still second level. I don't remember what his 40 time was when he came out. I don't know if it was great, but he's got some speed. It certainly burst at the start. And so he's going to be able to create enough separation with his strength and his burst to get open. I don't know what his hands are like. We've never seen him catch a ball, but they'll find a way to get him the ball. He's an incredibly hard worker. We, of course, know about the leadership standpoint. Is he going to create some drama when he starts talking about Jesus after post-game? Whatever if he does. Urban Meyer doesn't care. he wants his guys out there talking. And so hopefully, the Tebow thing subsides. If the Jaguars can be successful, it will start to become more about Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne and the rest of the guys on that offense. And, you know, the defense probably isn't going to be so spectacular for a little bit. But if the Jaguars can be successful, and I do think they can, they've got some pieces, it's going to be on the back of Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, and speaking of Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne, the two first-round draft picks of the Jacksonville Jaguars, and that was a team that, you know, there was no secret around the league that they were going to take, you know, Lawrence with that number one overall pick. The big question was, what would they do with their second round pick? And they went with Etienne, who a lot of people, you know, praised. They had as either their top or their second best, running back in the draft. And it continued the reunion tour. We saw a lot of quarterbacks get their number one wide receivers from college. Trevor Lawrence goes and gets his running back, who he played most of his time with at Clemson. So I like this move, but I also don't really like this move. I like it, obviously, because the chemistry is there. You've got Lawrence and Etienne. They know each other. They know, you know, they got the chemistry, the handoffs, the pass protections. Everything is already there. The coaching staff, Urban Meyer, you don't have to do a whole heck of a lot there. What I didn't like about this move was that they had a guy, James Robinson, undrafted rookie free agent, who absolutely blew up last year. Over 1,100 yards rushing on a terrible Jaguars team. He was really the only guy people were able to rely on consistently. Even guys like DJ Chark and, you know, LaVisca were kind of in the rearview mirror to this guy who just kind of carried that offense. So I thought they could. There were other better players on the board. Maybe you go and tackle other needs like the offensive line or start addressing that defense that is really terrible coming off of last year. They eventually would go on to do that with Tyson Campbell, their first pick in the second round. But I like this pick. I think it's going to generate a lot of hype. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, he's taking snaps right now exclusively a wide receiver, with Urban Meyer saying that, yes, he will play running back, but our goal is to get him lined up out wide, put him in the slot, and suddenly he becomes another gadget guy, someone who can take the pass out of the backfield or catch a ball, you know, running in the middle of the field as well. And for a guy like Trevor Lawrence, who already has that synergy with him, the sky's the limit for what this offense can do. We talked about how much we, you know, appreciate the Tebow signing. I think Jacksonville's building something special on offense, and I sincerely appreciate that Urban Meyer isn't just tossing James Robinson to the side. I think that's truly a diamond in the rough. So you've got a running back one or running back two, and hey, you got yourself your gadget guy as a slot receiver in Etienne.
Absolutely, yeah. I love this pick. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I mean, you mentioned the James Robinson situation, and I mean, make me shy away from this pick at all, because as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, it makes so much sense. Reuniting, of course, Etienne with his college quarterback. They've got that chemistry, as you mentioned. But James Robinson, yes, he had one successful year. That doesn't necessarily mean he's going to continue that successful level into a completely new offense, a new situation. They've got a new coach. How will that change the situation and his success level? But if we can give him, you know, a spell back in Etienne, who can give him a couple of snaps off, who can maybe take the third down duties. I don't know what Etienne's blocking is like. Actually, I think I've seen him block pretty decently at Clemson, but he's
got
the screen
pass
game incredibly well.
For sure.
Yeah, but his screen game is phenomenal. I've seen him do a lineup at slot wide receiver in college, you know, splitting out on motion plays and whatnot. But if he's doing this more consistently, and taking snaps at wide receiver, you're going to see Etienne and Robinson lining up on the field at the same time quite often. Now that becomes pretty threatening when you talk about a DJ Chark and a LaVisca Chenault also on that offense. Suddenly that's a lot of weapons that Trevor Lawrence has to work with. I think this offense could become a pretty ground and pound offense. I'm not entirely sure. I don't see it being quite as high flying as the Bengals were with Joe Burrow last year, talking about number one pick in direct comparison. But I think they're going to have a little bit more of a running game and use Robinson and Etienne to take some of that pressure off of Trevor Lawrence. But this kid's kind of set up for success to me. If they can at least develop a good running game and make defenses have to play a little bit on the backs of their heels on third and shorts and whatnot, I think you're going to see Trevor Lawrence have quite a lot of success, even very early into the season. There's a lot of exciting games that we can talk about. The Jags play the Bengals in one of the funnier games to me. I think it's got like 11 or 12 players from Clemson and LSU in that game, which is hilarious to me. They're going to play the Jets a little later in the season. Matchup of number one versus number two. And the Jags start to their season actually isn't that difficult. They've got some winnable games in there. I think we're going to see quite a lot of success between these two, Lawrence and Etienne. We're going to see fantasy numbers potentially from them. I don't know if I'm going to be drafting Lawrence that highly with my first pick, but Etienne, as far as second string running backs go, I think he should be a guy that a lot of people should be looking at for filling that kind of flex role, wide receiver slash running back. I think he's going to be fitting right in there. Speaking of wonderful combinations, Football MD is partnered with E2G Sports, the home of the Unsung Sports Grid. Want to give you guys a chance to call in if you've got anything to talk about. We're talking about the draft today. We've been talking about Tebow and Rodgers. We're going to talk about a few more teams, especially we're going to talk about the Jets next. But if you guys have any opinions on what's going on, give us a call, 516-387-1702. That's 516-387-1702.
The Jets. I really, really liked what the Jets did. Not necessarily in free agency, but I really like what they did in the draft. I like Zach Wilson as a prospect. You worry a little bit about the one-year production at BYU, not exactly the best competition. I loved the Elijah Vera Tucker, despite the fact he went to a terrible school in USC. I love the fact that they took an offensive lineman to partner with their first-round pick from last year at left tackle. You take an offensive guard, essentially, is where he's going to be placed. That way you protect Zach Wilson's blind side. You've got him a left guard and a left tackle, and you're protecting your investment. I love that. You go out in the second round and get Elijah Moore, wide receiver from Ole Miss. He's going to be penciled in opposite of Corey Davis. You've got Jamison Crowder still there. That's your slot guy right there. And I absolutely love that. Elijah Moore, many considered, and I think we even had him in our Football MD mock draft as a first-round talent, an easy first-round talent. And they go out and get him in the second round. You pick up Michael Carter at running back. We're going a little deep here, but you filled four, if you include quarterback, of the most glaring holes in your roster with your first four picks. You're retooling, rebuilding this offense around Wilson. And just go back and watch Wilson's reaction to getting drafted. Watch his interview. Watch the way he composes himself, that cockiness, that swagger, that you know, the spotlight immediately goes to him. He's a guy who leads teams. I didn't really see that at BYU, but I'm like, dang, listening to this guy talk and his interviews and you know, his reaction to getting drafted, that's a guy that New York needs. That's a guy who can handle the spotlight. Who would have thought a kid from Utah, you know, BYU, had that kind of swagger in him? Okay, that's what the Jets need. I don't think that's what Mark Sanchez had. I don't think that's what Sam Darnold had. I think Wilson has that X factor. We know he has the physical tools, and I think the Jets are building something special around him. And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, they've got extra draft capital next year from the Jamal Adams trade and from trading Sam Darnold. So I think the Jets could sneakily be building something special here.
I agree. I actually like what the Jets are doing. They're focusing very heavily on their offensive line, which, of course, is always going to be the best way to protect your quarterback, make him look good. You're going to give him the opportunities to show his talent, and Zach Wilson does have talent. He's a bit of a gunslinger. He's the kind of guy that's going to go and try to make those big plays, which to me is, we just had that guy in Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold had all of that talent, and he threw those passes that are, somebody's coming down with it. I don't know if it's my guy or your guy. And it gives me a little bit of concern. But at the same time, I'd rather have a guy who's willing to go and make the tough throw than who shies away from it. And Zach Wilson definitely is not going to shy away from a difficult play. We did also upgrade our running backs a little bit, LaMichael Perrin. We also got Tevin Coleman. I don't know who's going to be starting at running back on this team, to be honest, but we'll see. You mentioned Michael Carter. We upgraded at wide receiver. Yeah. You mentioned Elijah Moore. We had mocked him first round. He did fall to them in the second round. I don't know if that's necessarily a shock. There are a whole lot of wide receivers in this draft. Hard to justify them going every other pick, but they almost did. So, yes, I agree that the Jets are building talent. The other part of this is they're in a tough division in the NFC East. I mean, they're very clearly the fourth team in that division as it stands today. The Bills look to be perhaps not just the class of the AFC East, but potentially the class of the AFC. depending on how things go. They can definitely compete with Kansas City. They went and saw what Tampa Bay did in the Super Bowl last year, and they were like, huh, that looks like it works. Let's go draft two premier pass rushers in our first two picks. You know, they did get Gregory Rousseau out of Miami, and that's exciting. He's already talking some smack. I like what's going on in Buffalo. You look at Miami. I mean, you say the Jets have some draft capital. Look at what Miami's got. They just keep grabbing an extra first-round pick every year or two, a pick or two every year. And, gosh, the amount of young talent that they're creating with a very prodigy young head coach in Brian Flores. I mean, we're still waiting to see if Tua can deliver on the promises that were made on him coming out of college. But this Miami team, they've got a lot of young talent. Even if Tua doesn't pan out, we've got a couple of first-round picks next year. One of those is probably going to be high enough to draft a decent quarterback if we need to. So, and if not, Miami might be able to put a trade package together for a big-name quarterback. That's possible as well. Maybe Deshaun Watson makes more sense next year. I mean, going past that, even the Patriots. The Patriots had a crazy busy offseason this year. In the draft, you know, of course, they pick up Mac Jones. And they develop by grabbing a couple of young tight ends. They develop some wide receivers. They've got some defensive players coming back, like Kyle Van Noy. The Patriots look a lot better this year, too. I mean, I don't see the Jets. I mean, can they get to 1-5 or 2-4 in division this year? That would be a feat in itself to not go 0-6 against their divisional rivals. And so, I mean, yes, I can see that they're building something good. I like the way they're going, focusing on protecting their young quarterback, giving him a chance to succeed. It's going to be a long road. When you look at the difference between where Zach Wilson landed and where Trevor Lawrence landed, sure, they both landed on bad teams as of the previous year. But Trevor Lawrence lands in a situation where the AFC South is very much in flux. Like, sure, the Colts went and grabbed Carson Wentz. They look a bit stronger this year, but we don't know. Carson Wentz is coming off of a season where he was sacked 50 times in 12 games. How much did that shake him up? I mean, we're both pretty high on Carson Wentz, but he's an unknown. You look at Tennessee. Derrick Henry can't put up 2,000 yards again, and they let two of their top three wide receivers go. So how much is Tennessee going to be able to compete going forward, not to mention their top tight end? Did they upgrade on defense? Yeah, sure. We'll see if Caleb Farley can really put things up, as was promised, talking about his rookie season. And then Houston, that's a dumpster fire right there for the next several years. So Jacksonville is actually in a much better situation as far as competing in their division than Houston is over the next few years. So we're going to be comparing Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson for their whole careers. We're going to be talking about them as opposed to one another. And for the first couple of years, I'm looking like Trevor Lawrence is going to have a little more initial success.
That's fair. That's totally fair. And here at Football MD, you know, it's pretty obvious we have some of our favorite. Every doctor has their favorite patient. Every person has their favorite case study. Dalton and I both have our favorite teams, especially as we started the show and we look at what these teams have done this off season. And it's no secret one of Dalton's favorite teams is the New York Giants. One of my favorite teams this offseason has quickly become the Miami Dolphins. And you mentioned the Dolphins being in the same division as the Jets. And while the Jets are still kind of building something up, if the Jets are just starting to simmer, the Dolphins are boiling right now. That pot has reached a boil. I liked what they did this offseason, making smart, calculated moves to get younger. And then they go out and have, in my opinion, the best draft this season. The best draft of any team in the league. You go out and get Jaylen Waddle, who, okay, at number 6 is probably a little high for, you know, a player of his caliber, but you can't be upset about it because it fills a need. It reunites him with Tua Tagovailoa, and it was the number 2 wide receiver in this draft. Okay, that's fine. You go out and you get Jalen Phillips at number 18, my number 1 edge rusher. Kid stays in Miami, freak of an athlete, and he's going to be giving Josh Allen, Mac Jones, and excuse me, Zach Wilson fits for the rest of their careers. Then you go out and in the second round, you keep the momentum going, getting Javon Holland. Guys, this guy was projected to go in the middle of the first round, the number one safety by a long shot in this draft, and you go out and get him in the second round. And then you go out and get Liam Eichenberg, the tackle from Notre Dame. I think people, because Notre Dame got smashed in the college football playoffs again, I think everybody was kind of down on Notre Dame prospects. But Eichenberg is a truly special offensive tackle. He's got everything you want. It's nothing flashy, but the way he mirrors every type of edge rusher, it's going to be something special. And that's what's so great about having a left-handed quarterback is that you can keep him at left tackle, and that's not going to be protecting Tua's blind side. Or if you see him just absolutely blossoming, I know you've got Laremy Tunsil there, you can swap the two. It's going to be very flexible offense and for this team. But a perfectly balanced draft, two offensive weapons, two defensive weapons, a young roster on the cusp of the playoffs last year. We expect Tua to take this leap, especially now that he's got weapons like Waddle, Parker, Will Fuller. You've got your guy Gesicki at tight end. This team is really coming together. You've got a ton of players on rookie contracts. You've got the salary cap to make some moves. You've got draft capital just in case Tua doesn't take that next step. I'm foaming at the mouth at how much I love what the Dolphins are doing. And if you're a Dolphins fan, I know you've been in a pit of misery for a long time. But I think this team is finally turning a corner and can compete in the AFC East.
I appreciate all of what you just said. And it causes me some concern. And I'll tell you why. The Dolphins are still just a year removed from, or still just, well, I guess 2 years removed, you could say maybe, from that tanking for Tua season, where they were just throwing the whole season away trying to get to that first overall pick. And Brian Flores has, you know, seemed to have changed their culture a little bit. They ended up not getting that first overall pick. They ended up getting Tua, I think, at fifth or sixth. And they are able to, and they've been able to create a massive culture change. However, what strikes me so much about the Dolphins last season is they seemed almost like a year ahead in many ways. And I wonder if that is sustainable. Now, Ryan Fitzpatrick came in and, you know, he caught fire as he's done before. And they had the gunslinging plays. Everything was coming together. But I'm wondering if this team can be sustainable, if they can, you know, turn all of these young players into experience. They don't have a whole lot of veteran leadership on this team. I can't think of a guy who I can look to as, you know, this is going to be the guy that they're going to look to. I mean, what are you talking about? A Devontae Parker, maybe? I don't know. Who's been there for many years and can be the guy that they're going to look to for leadership when, I mean, maybe they're just looking to Brian Flores because he's not that much older than any of them. I don't know. But this team, I worry about them because, as we mentioned, they are in an incredibly tough division. Can they beat the Bills twice? I don't know. They got smashed by them last year. Can they beat the Patriots twice? I don't know. Can they beat the Jets both times? Even that could be in flux. I don't know. I think Miami's got an incredibly strong team. I think they've got a very talented roster. We've mentioned our excitement / concern for Tua, and everybody's talking up Brian Flores a lot. The Dolphins are going to have more of a target on them this season. They're not going to be able to just come in and surprise teams. They had a great season last year, and you're not going to see a team like LA walking in there and just get utterly obliterated like last season. They're not going to be able to just manhandle tough teams like they did last year with just purely great defensive play, some excellent special teams, turnovers, and efficient football. The Dolphins this year, they're going to have to create a little more excitement on the offensive side of the football. I still don't know who's leading our running back attack necessarily. So how are we getting a power running game together to take some pressure off of Tua? Or is Tua going to gunsling? I don't know if I like that because they've got offensive weapons to help him out. But is it going to be enough to make him really blossom as, I mean, a second-year quarterback? We're putting a lot of expectations on this guy and a lot of demands, really, basically saying his career is at a crossroads in his second year. I don't know if this is sustainable for the Dolphins. I think maybe they are a year ahead and need to take some time to figure this out. Do want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, E2G Sports, proud home of the Unsung Sports Grid, and we are proud to be associated with them at Football MD, Mendoza and Davidson, bringing in your prescription and solution for all of your NFL teams. If you've got a question, if you've got a concern about what is ailing your team, give us a call at 516-387-1702. That's 516-387-1702.
All truly valid points, and I think the one that really sticks out to me is that they have no run game. I mean, what, are we leaning on Gaskin to be our number one guy? That's a recipe for disaster. So the Dolphins are like I said, they're boiling, but the pasta's not done just yet. Give it another year, and maybe that pasta sticks to the wall, and this team can really start competing. I wanted to touch on a couple other teams before we wrap up the show here in segment four. Two teams that Dolphin and I have absolutely ragged on this whole offseason have been the Philadelphia Eagles and the Detroit Lions. And, you know, by all accounts, it makes a lot of sense. You know, the Lions have no talent on their roster except for maybe, you know, DeAndre Swift. You traded for Michael Brockers. Great. You know, you've got Jared Goff, that's probably just your bridge quarterback. It's fine. Roster is devoid of talent. Same with the Eagles. You don't have a lot. You have question marks on quarterback. You've passed up great wide receiver talents for Jalen Reagor, who missed all of last year. You Jets in Carson Wentz, don't get anything in return. But I think this draft was a really good bright spot in what was a terrible offseason for both teams. And I say terrible, but really, the draft kind of saved these guys from truly having awful off seasons. The Eagles, of course, trading up with making a deal with the devil, trading up with their arch rival Cowboys to take Devonta Smith, jumping over the Giants, who they also screwed over from getting into the playoffs themselves. Man, they just keep sticking it to them. And you take Devonta Smith. The Giants are foaming. They're furious. You get a guy to go opposite Jalen Reagor to help Jalen Hurts. And I don't need to say anything else about Penei Sewell. Y'all know that was my number. If Trevor Lawrence is number one, y'all know Penei Sewell was my number two player in this draft. Falls to the Lions at number seven. Whoever they end up going with at center in the year 2022 and beyond, you have that left tackle position solidified for years to come. And that in and of itself is enough to give this team an A for their draft grade. But then they go out and take some other players, two defensive tackles, a cornerback, building up that defense. I like what this team is doing, going out and getting physical blue-collar guys to truly embody the spirit of Detroit. And I just wanted to give a shout-out to both of those teams because we've been really harsh on them. I think they both got Fs in our off-season, you know, mid-off-season grades. But those are both looking like A drafts to me, and something that the franchise can start to turn itself around on.
Yeah, and I want to take a second on the Lions here, actually, because not only did they have that good draft in supporting the center of that team in the trenches, they go and they sign Frank Ragnow and make him the highest-paid center in league history. They don't just go and make that Matt Stafford trade and say, yeah, this is just going to be our bridge guy as we take in Jared Goff. They go out and defend that pick and as Jared Goff comes in. And, you know, they're talking about Jared Goff. I read in an article this week, the Lions faithful are talking about him as, you know, this is a guy who is just a couple of years removed from getting his team to the Super Bowl. This is a guy who the last time we saw him completed 70% of his passes with a broken hand. This is a guy who, you know, has that Detroit toughness. And we're bringing an identity of toughness to the city of Detroit. We've got strength in the middle of this team. We've got a fast, speedy running back who's going to be a playmaker and is going to have wide open holes to get through with this powerful offensive line between Penei Sewell, Frank Ragnow, and the gang. of developing a defensive pass rush as well. Hopefully we take a step forward on our cornerback first-round pick last year that we've been pretty harsh on. But team is starting to develop an identity. And, you know, we memed on Dan Campbell so hard when he came in as the coach, but they're doubling down on that. They're doubling down on, no, we're going to be a team that fights and is tough. And, I mean, we can say the biting kneecaps things, but we'll keep the knee packs out of the kneecaps out of the humble pie for a minute. But this team is developing an identity, and that's what I love about what the Lions are doing. Now, you talk about the Eagles, on the other hand, and that's when I get a little more concerned, where, yes, I like that the Eagles went and got Devonta Smith. I like that they worked really hard to screw over the Giants. Sure, it's a little petty, but you know, they make the decision that really helps them and hurts their division rival for several years to come. Devonta Smith to the Eagles. I like it. You match up Jalen Hurts with a guy that he had some snaps with in college. I don't know if they were even starting at the same time when Jalen Hurts was still there, but they were on the roster together. Now we have this young core of wide receivers and a young quarterback in Jalen Hurts. And there's a lot of unknowns. Jalen Hurts has shown flashes of excellence, and he's shown flashes of mediocrity when it comes to passing the football on an efficient, consistent basis. He's definitely a dynamic runner of the football. But, and sure, we got Miles Sanders as well. The offensive line is kind of in shambles. The defense is kind of in shambles. We've got Darius Slay on the back end, sure, at cornerback, but what else are we doing? I like that we're kind of developing identity, but I can't say that we are developing an identity. We've got speed right now. Speed on the offensive side of the football. Lots of speed between Miles Sanders, Jalen Hurts, Devonta Smith, Jalen Reagor. If he were to come back healthy, yes, this is a potentially very threatening young roster of offensive skill positions. But I'm still not seeing, and part of it is we're going to be seeing a new coach this year. What is going to be the scheme that's going to bring these guys together? How can we put them in position to be successful? You know, Devonta Smith is a guy that, sure, you can line him out there at the end as your number one wide receiver every play. But how much more valuable does he become when you put him in motion and you bring him into the slot? Maybe you line him up at running back and for a play and have him swing out wide. You get him involved in the screen game. This is the kind of guy that you need to get the ball to so often to get value out of him. He's a guy that can make yards after the catch. He makes tough catches over the middle. He's got hands like Biletnikoff covered in stick'em. this kid is an incredible athlete, and I want to see the Eagles do more with him than line up, have Jalen Hurts look to him, and then scramble, because that's what I fear with this Eagles team, because I don't see them having the offensive line to give Jalen Hurts the time to get Devonta Smith the ball on a consistent basis.
Even if Hurts isn't the guy, I still like what they're building around him. You got your two wide receivers now. You got Miles Sanders in the backfield. You took Landon Dickerson, center from Alabama, big, beefy boy. That's going to anchor your offensive line for so many years to come. So if Hurts goes out and falls flat on his face, we're looking at the Eagles taking their franchise caliber quarterback next year. And hey, that's not exactly a bad thing. We've got two wide receivers, as we mentioned. We've got Sanders, we've got a running back established. We have a center to anchor that offensive line, to take snaps under. So I like that they are starting to put the pieces in place. If Hurts fails, great, get him out. He's gone. We bring in the next guy, whether it's a veteran, or we go out and draft our guy, and we assume it would be drafting their guy early in the first round. I think there's something here for this team to build on, whereas this point, you know, early in the offseason, when they got rid of Carson Wentz, this team had nothing on it. It was Sanders and a whole lot of nothing else. So I'm excited for what this team can do. But I agree with you. I think with the new coaching staff. It all has to come together. It all has to gel well. And one thing we saw earlier this offseason as well was the Los Angeles Chargers getting their new head coach. And we were a little worried about what this team was going to do and how they were going to protect Justin Herbert. They had no left tackle on the roster. And as a Broncos fan, now I'm getting kind of scared because they let Rashawn Slater fall to the Chargers at number 13. And some guys were comparing this guy to being even better than Penei Sewell. Rashawn Slater, of course, we've all seen the tape of him shutting down Chase Young, who blew the league up last year. Then you go out in the second round and get Asante Samuel Jr., the cornerback from Florida State. The Broncos, the Chiefs, and I guess the Raiders have a lot of weapons on offense. You get a guy to go out and mirror them. And then you take Josh Palmer in the third round, a huge wide receiver from Tennessee. Maybe now we can start, jettisoning off Mike Williams, who's been kind of a bust for us, and put Palmer opposite of Keenan Allen. But I just wanted to give the Chargers as my last little shout-out for a team who really aced this draft in a way that not a lot of people are talking about, because Slater to protect Herbert, I've mentioned it a lot on Football MD, but that's the best combination that you can go with is a quarterback who is a franchise-caliber quarterback on a rookie contract and getting him his bookend left tackle on a rookie contract. You don't have to worry about the two most important positions for the next 10 years. As a Broncos fan, it makes me really nervous. And the Asante Samuel Jr. pick is just icing on the cake to go out and replace a couple cornerbacks that they let go in free agency. The Chargers are probably still the second, maybe third best team in this division. I don't think they can truly contend with the Chiefs this year. But again, I like what they're doing, and I think they just further that gap between being the last team in the AFC West. I see both the Raiders and the Broncos struggling to keep up with this team this year.
I agree, and potentially for years to come, as the Chargers, they have, as you said, the anchor of their team with their quarterback, their left tackle, a very strong center they've brought in Corey Linsley. I do wonder a little bit about the skill positions. I mean, you mentioned Josh Palmer. It's exciting, sure, but I'm not sure yet. Keenan Allen, I think, of course, yes, very strong player. Mike Williams has had quite a few struggles. We also let Hunter Henry go this year. What are we doing at running back? I mean, we're quite a bit removed from having Melvin Gordon carry the load for this team. And since then, we've kind of been doing the running back by committee thing. It's not been that successful, really. I mean, this isn't the Niners running attack where we're just spitting out a 100-yard rusher every week, no matter what his name is. And sure. Running the ball gets a lot easier when you have an excellent offensive line. And the Chargers have significantly upgraded their offensive line. If Rashawn Slater comes in, he did miss a full year of football this past year, but if he comes in and he is completely ready to go, the Chargers are going to be a threat. They're not just going to be a threat to the Raiders and the Broncos. They're going to be a threat to the Chiefs. And I can see that happening right away. Maybe they don't finish first in the division, but they're going to be a team that could take a game easily off of the Chiefs, especially if we talk about in Los Angeles. And hopefully the Chargers can start putting some fans in their stadium, as that's been a different concern, as they've been struggling to develop a bit of a culture in Los Angeles since they left San Diego. But Justin Herbert has come in, and he has shown to be a young star. Guys like Peter Schrager are already picking him to go out and win the MVP right now. I don't know if I'm that gung-ho on him, but definitely exciting piece for the Chargers for years to come. But I'm going to need to see a little more work on the skill position side of things.
We talked a lot. We gave a lot of shout-outs to teams who had great drafts. Join us next week. I can't believe our hour is already up. So join us next week as we are going to break down maybe a couple teams who didn't exactly have the strongest of drafts or some more areas of concerns, what we wish some teams might have done. We got about another week or so of analyzing the draft and wrapping up the NFL offseason before we start looking forward to the season upcoming, schedules, games, fantasy football. We've got a lot left here on Football MD before the start of the football season. Hey, I'm just eyeing this labor negotiation between the NFL and NFLPA if teams are going to start reporting to their offseason workouts. So join us next week as Football MD picks it up. This is the E2G Sports Network, home of the Unsung Sports Grid. Have a great week, folks.